Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Ready from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 51, The Deliverance of Muchukunda, text number 45. Sri Muchukunda Uvacha. Vimohito yam jana ishamayaya. Svadiyaya tvam nabajajanarta drik. Sukaya dukkha prabhaveshu sajjate. Sajjate kriheshu yoshit purushascha vanchitaha. Vimohito yam jana isha mayaya. Chadiyaya tvam nabajajanarta drik. Sukaya dukha prabhaveshu sajjate. Griheshu yoshit purushascha vanchitaha. Sri Muchukunda said, Vimohitaha, bewildered. I am
this.
Janaha.
Person.
Isha.
O Lord.
Mayaya. By the illusory energy.
Tvadiyaya.
Your own.
Tvam.
You.
Nabhajati.
Does not worship. Anartadrik.
Not seeing one's real benefit.
Sukaya.
For the sake of happiness.
Dukha.
Misery.
Prabhaveshu.
In things that cause.
Sajjate.
Becomes entangled.
Griheshu.
In affairs of family life.
Yoshit.
Woman.
Purushaha.
Man.
Cha.
And.
Vanchitaha.
Cheated.
Sri Muchukunda said, O Lord, the people of this world, both men and women, are bewildered by your illusory energy. Unaware of their real benefit, they do not worship you, but instead seek happiness by entangling themselves in family affairs, which are actually sources of misery. Purport. Muchukunda immediately makes it clear that he is not going to ask the Lord for material blessings. He has advance spiritually far beyond those who try to exploit religion for all kinds of material benefits. Artha means value, and the negation of this word anartha means that which is valueless or useless. Thus the term anartadrik indicates those whose vision is focused on valueless things, who have not understood what actual artha or value is. All that glitters is not gold. And Muchukunda here emphatically states that we should not ruin our spiritual chances by entangling ourselves in the fool's gold of bodily relationships. We are meant to love the Lord. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmaye Sri Gurave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam. This is quite a. This is the first statement. The first offering by Mucchakunda to Krishna, and quite a substantial statement in the first stanza, the first verse, as is pointed out in the purport here. Mucchakunda is presenting himself to Krishna. In a way that Krishna will understand that he's not interested in approaching the Lord for some material boon or benediction, which is the general purpose or the reason for which people come to perform worship. Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita that there's four types of people who surrender or begin the process of devotion. Ato jigyasu artati jnani cha. This is considered to be the best amongst men, the devotees, those who approach the Lord in devotion. But out of those, the person who's in knowledge, jnani, is considered the best, because the ato jigyasu and the artati, in other words, those who are distressed, those who are inquisitive, and those who are desiring some pecuniary benefit, some remuneration, some benefit for themselves, are materially motivated. And what happens is that a person who's somewhat materially motivated, they'll approach the Lord for some material benediction, and then when they get their benediction, they'll be satisfied and go away. It's just a business deal. In other words, I worship you, and you give me what I want, and then that's the deal. So, Mucchakunda is presenting himself. I'm not like that. I'm not like the people of this world who are attached or attracted to material things. Because these things, wealth, freedom from distress, even being inquisitive, just inquiring out of curiosity, each one of those motivations has some selfishness attached to it, and some attachment to things material. And of course, those things material have limitations. Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, na sato vijate bhavo, na bhavo vijate sataha, ubhayor apidrishta tas tvanayas tattadashapi. The persons who have seen the truth, or have real knowledge and understanding, have understood, have realized by studying the characteristics of both things, the sat and the asat, they've realized that of the temporary, nasat, There's no endurance. This is the nature of the material world. Anything that we become attached to in the material creation is faulty. And as a result, therefore, undesirable. And what is that fault? The fault is that it does not endure. Nasat. It is not permanent. So of the impermanent, there is no duration. And of the permanent, there is no cessation. That's the spiritual. The living entity. And those things, well, the living entity is spiritual. Those things which are related to spiritual life and spiritual pursuits are permanent. Whereas the things of the material world are not permanent. And one who becomes attached to material things because of their lacking permanence, then if we're seeking happiness in those things, we're bound to be frustrated and disappointed in due course of time. Because they'll be taken away. They don't last. So, the wise, Krishna also mentions in Nateshu Ramate Buddha, the intelligent Buddha, those who have intelligence, don't seek refuge or don't seek happiness. Ramate means to be satisfied or to be happy. Rama means the giver of pleasure. Ramate. Na teshu. To those who are intelligent, na teshu ramate buddha. They don't seek pleasure in such things, but rather they look for the permanence of spiritual advancement, of spiritual achievement, spiritual realization. This is called artha, what is desirable or what is necessary, what has value. Here, the word is mentioned here. Mucchukunda says, people of this world, Janaha, most people of this world, Janaha, Vimohitaha, are bewildered. O Lord, Mayaya, Twadiyaya, by your illusory energy. And as a result, Na Bhajate Twam, they don't worship you. They're bewildered by the illusory energy which is designed in such a way as to appear as if of some value. Right? The material energy is designed in such a way as to appear of as if it is of great value. This is Krishna's potency in the material energy, that he makes something appear to be something which it is not. Right? The material energy is designed in such a way so that it looks like it has great promise and that it is of substantial value. But actually it's not. Why? Because it is impermanent. It is not permanent. It is temporary. You know, this is... I purchased a book the other day. It's called Principles of Design. It's a very interesting book because it can be used in many, many ways. Principles of Design. And one of the principles of design, one I was reading yesterday, is called aesthetic advantage. Aesthetic advantage, right? And the aesthetic advantage describes this point. It's understood as a design principle, especially the example that is given of Nokia. They realized this. You know, their phones originally were very hard to use. In fact, most phones are actually quite hard to use. But what they do is they design them so they look very attractive. Even, you know, they design them, they don't do it so much these days, so you could you could modify the casing of the phone so you could personalise it. So that, you know, it was sort of like some kind of bonding exercise between you and your phone. Huh? So they know this principle. If something looks good, even if it's hard to use, right? Even if it's hard to use, if it looks good, people will tolerate the fact that it's actually hard to use. Because they like it. It looks good. It's attractive. And so, you know, the telephones are marketed now as even cameras also. They're marketed as what you might call, you know, like clothing, like jewellery.
Accessories.
Accessories, yes. Accessories. Right? And even though you can't work out how to use 75% of the thing, most of us only can use 20% of our phone. That's another principle, the 80-20 principle, right? 20% of your effort gives you 80% of the results that you want out of the phone. So it's another design principle. But it's interesting, this principle, and it's mentioned here. All that glitters is not gold. So the marketing people, they know this. Okay, let's make our phones really attractive, even though they are quite hard. Of course, they're improving them. But they know this principle. If it looks good, then people will be attracted to it and they'll want it even if it gives them trouble. Right? And the material energy is designed just like that. Of course, these design principles have against who they come from. Krishna is the original designer and he knows how to design things perfectly. So he's designed the material energy in such a way so that even though it is full of trouble, right? Janma mrityu jara vyadhi. This is the material world. Dukkha dosha anudarshanam. Even though everybody experiences and everybody sees that the material world is just a place of struggle. Abrahma bhuvana loka puna avatuno juna. Right? From even, you know, you can become Lord Brahma down to a germ. Every one of us has to suffer, basically. Birth, death, old age and disease. This is the material creation. It's designed like that. Yet we think, oh no, it's okay. It's like I was talking to my friend Vin, he's in hospital. He last week his pulse rate dropped to 32. And he went in for a procedure on his arm to strengthen up some of the... He's old, 74, 75, and his tendons have sort of pulled away from his arm, so he can't use his arm, so he's getting some treatment. And you know, whenever you go to the doctor, they give you a... they test your blood pressure. Right? Whenever you go to see the doctor, they'll test your blood pressure. So. Watch out, here comes James Bond. See, this is an example of, you know, the phone's just to bother him, right? But it does a fancy sound, so I think, oh, wow, this is important. Huh? It's James Bond coming. It's probably just the ringtone that he's got for his wife. You can set your phone up in such a way so that you know who's calling you, so you could just ignore it. So anyway, the nurse said to the doctor, I think, you know, there's something serious here. He's got a pulse rate of 32. And the doctor said, well, how did he get here? So when he walked in, he said, oh, it's okay then. But they did say, if you had a pulse rate like this in a hospital, you'd be surrounded by, you know, 20 people trying to work out what's wrong with you. So anyway, that night, he was feeling very ill and dizzy. So he went to the hospital. He rang up his doctor and the doctor said, you better get to the hospital. And uh, when he got to the hospital, they found out that his pulse rate was 32, so he had 20 people running around him trying to work out what was wrong and put him in the bed, and there was lights flashing and all sorts of things going on. It was an emergency. And he's been in hospital. In 1987, he had a second bypass surgery. And I'm not sure how many bypasses they put in, but there was a few. And I said to him, I said, how much time did they give you when they gave you the bypass operation? But how much time did they give you? Because I remember Yadunath, when he had his bypass surgery, he was told by the doctors, you'll have 5 years. And pretty much Yadunath left his body 5 years after he had the operation. So anyway, Vin said, well, they told me that it would last forever. See, kitty. He said, yep, that's what they told me.
How old is he?
He's 74.
74.
So his heart's playing up. So anyway, they've done... Yesterday he went in for an angioplasty, you know, they just, and he said, I fell asleep actually while they were doing the procedure. And he woke up and he said, the doctor was saying, I can't believe it. I can't believe it. I can't believe it. He said, it looks like it was only done yesterday. So anyway, it was interesting because at the end of the conversation, Vin was saying to me, he says, look, it could have been a lot worse. It could have been a lot worse. Because what they're going to do is, I think they're just going to put a pacemaker. They're just going to implant a little pacemaker in his heart. It's only beating at half the rate that it should. So it needs to be boosted up for double. Right? So they got these little... So, you know, I was thinking, I said to Vin, this is what everybody thinks in the material world. You know, it could have been worse. Despite the fact that life is a disaster. Right? And the fact that he's facing death in reality. Right? He's facing death. But, you know, this is how the living entity thinks. Well, it could have been worse. Life could be a lot worse. So, you know, we're ever the optimist in the material creation. Thinking that things will always get better. This is the nature of the material energy. The material energy is designed to give us trouble. Birth, death, old age, disease. This is the system. This is how the material energy works. Yet we think, no. There is a hope. So therefore he says here, and this demonstrates the potency of Maya and illustrates this principle of aesthetic advantage. Maya makes everything look very attractive, even though it's against the background of this birth, death, old age and disease, and the fact that we have to work very hard. When you think about it, if you just think about this last week, this is a question I always ask at the Sunday feast. You think about the last week. Tell me how many minutes of the last week were you in total ecstasy, just absolute bliss? How many minutes? Do you reckon you probably can count them on one hand? But when you think about the struggle, how much struggle, how many minutes of struggle did you go through this week? How many? Can't count. As many at least as you were at work. Right? Right? Despite the fact, you know, birth, death, old age and disease, if that's not bad enough, then we've got to go and work. Right? How much fun did you have at work this week? Or what about if you're studying? How much fun did you have at school? Huh? This is amazing. The material energy is designed in such a way as we're suffering like anything, yet we think, yeah, next week things will be better. Despite the fact, for the last year, or two, or three, or five, or 10, or 20, it's been struggle all the way through. Yet we're still focused here. As Muchukunda says, Mayaya Tvadiyaya. We're bewildered. The living entities are bewildered by your material energy. And they're focused on what? Anatta Drik. Their focus is on that which is not really beneficial for them. It has no permanence. Whatever we think of in the material world that is going to make us happy, whatever we think will make us happy, is guaranteed to be the cause of our suffering. Right? Guaranteed. Yet, this material energy has such a potency, it has a shakti, endowed by Krishna. That's why it's so potent. Daivi hi yesha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya. Very difficult, impossible actually to overcome this influence of the material energy because it's Krishna's maya, it's his potency. It's actually working under Krishna's direction. Krishna doesn't have to do it himself, but he empowers his devotees actually to help out, manage the whole material creation. And keep everybody in track, ensnared. Actually, the material energy has everybody ensnared, entrapped, held tightly in its grip. And interesting, even if you want to get out, she has the potency to pull you back in again. Huh? Avarnatmika and I can't remember the Sanskrit. The pulling, there's the holding down potency. The avaranatmika means covering over. And then there's the pulling down. So for the devotees, there's a special maya, shakti. So that when they try to get out, then she pulls them back in again. Huh? Testing shakti. Behind that is Krishna's orchestration, though. It's described how maya is the shadow. The spiritual realm is the reality. The material realm is a shadow of the spiritual realm. That's why the material world, even though it is totally false and illusory, appears to have some substance because it's a shadow of the original spiritual potency. And even the things of the material world appear to have some substance because it is an emblem, if you like, a symbol of the reality of the spiritual realm. But, as Muchukunda points out, because we're not aware of the fact that the material realm is only offering illusory boons, then we chase after them. Not wanting to worship Krishna, nabhajati. It's mentioned here. They do not worship you. So Muchukunda is saying, I'm not one of those people. I'm not worshipping. I'm not coming to you. Or there are those who worship the Lord, but then there's also those who approach the Lord just for material things. He's saying, I'm not any of those category. Here. They do not worship you, but instead seek happiness by entangling themselves. How do we entangle? Here's the example. How do we entangle ourselves? Griheshu. Yoshit. Purusha. Chavanchitaha. We cheat ourselves. We're all cheating ourselves. The men and the women, it says here. Yoshit means the ladies. And Purusha means the men. We're all thinking we're something that we're not. I'm a man, I'm very strong and powerful and intelligent. And I will protect you. Yeah? That's what the man's thinking. And the woman is thinking, I'm very attractive and talented, charming and delightful, and I can please you and look after you too. But actually, no one can look after anybody in reality, because everything ultimately is destroyed. And so therefore, if we're thinking in that way, then we're actually cheating. First of all, we're cheating ourselves when we think, yes, I am so powerful, or I am so together, or whatever. And we're cheating others. So therefore Prabhupada would say, you know, we're living in the society of the cheaters and the cheated. Because we're presenting ourselves, yes, I am very together, I'm very talented. Here's my degree. Here's my job. Here's my house. Here's my car. Huh?
Expert.
I am expert. This is vimohitaha. Moha means bewildered. Vimoha means completely bewildered, completely snowed under, completely, you know, covered over. What's that? There's the verses in the Bhagavad Gita that describe this. Vimohitaha. Yes, but the description in the 16th chapter, I think it is. The divine and the demoniac. What is it? Ishvaraham Mahambogi. Siddhavan. What is it? Siddhaham? Balavan Sukhi. Yeah. I am the enjoyer and the controller. Right? Ishvaraham Mahambogi. Siddha, I am perfect. Right? Balavan, Sukhi, I am very powerful and happy. this is what they think. He is my enemy. He is my enemy, or she is my enemy, and I shall destroy him. This is Krishna's describing. Me and my family are very aristocratic. Huh? We are the most expert in enjoying in the material world. Anyway, this is a vimohitaha, completely bewildered. This is especially with family affairs. We become, in fact, Prabhupada explains, and Muchukunda also is explaining here, we become entangled in family affairs. And they're such, they're designed in such a way so they appear to be extremely important. All important. Got to get a job. Have to earn some money. Have to get a house. Have to protect the children. Get an education. And it becomes and completely entangling. And as a result of that entanglement then, as Muchukunda is pointing out, the illusory energy keeps people completely covered over, completely unaware of who they are in reality. The material energy is so powerful that we can become completely lost to ourselves, completely lost to ourselves, so that we have no idea at all of who we are. Well, this is the nature of the material energy. It bewilders us. We lose sight of that which is really important to us. And we become completely absorbed in things which are extraneous or superficial in reality. those whose vision is focused on valueless things, who have not understood what actual arta or value is. This is the nature of the living entity trapped in the material world. Not aware of the fact that the pursuit of material happiness is simply the source of our distress. It's such a simple thing. Our pursuit of happiness is what causes us misery in the material world. All that glitters is not gold. And that's, you know, we become attracted to each other, attracted to the positions that we can hold, the money that we can earn, the power to enjoy, so-called enjoy. We become attracted and absorbed in these things. But at what cost? You know, there's the saying, you know, what profiteth a man if he gains the whole world but loses his eternal soul? What profit is there? There's no profit in the material world, because ultimately you can own the whole world, but at death, poof, everything's gone. And then what happens? Due to the fact that you've been engaged in sinful activities in order to acquire that, those possessions, that enjoyment, that position or whatever, then again you have to take birth. And who knows where. And suffer. Again and again and again. Puna janmana. Again, take birth. So, Mucchakunda is saying, you know, we shouldn't become enamored by the illusory offerings of the material energy. Because this puts a devotee actually in a very difficult position, because how is it, you know, here we are in the material world and we can theoretically understand, yes, it's all Maya. Right? It's all illusion. But even though theoretically we understand it's all illusion, we still have the attraction for it. Right? We want to... But actually we still... Even when we're, you know, pushing it away, we're still pulled towards it. Huh? Because, you know, that rejection is actually just the opposite side of the coin of attachment. So on the one hand we're attracted, but then on the other hand we know, oh, this bat's probably rejected. So that puts a devotee in a very difficult position, because theoretically we can understand, yes, the material world is just a place of Maya. It's all illusion. But at the same time, we've got to deal realistically with the fact that we're still attracted to and attached to the illusion. So we've got to do something about it. So, you know, it's not such a simple thing just to say, yes, it's all Maya, I give it up. You're all in Maya, and now I'm going to be a Paramahamsa. Huh? One has to learn how to see everything in relationship to Krishna. And one also has to learn how to gauge how deeply attached we are to the forms of the material creation, and then place ourselves in a situation where we can gradually work our way out of that attachment and attraction for material things. Very rare for a person simply to be able to cut off everything just like that and walk away from it. Huh? Prabhupada gives you the example of cutting your fingernails. You know, you have to make sure that your fingernail has grown to a certain length before you can cut it off and not feel any pain. Right? You know, if your fingernail has grown very long, then you can just cut it, boom, and throw it away. No problem. But if you try to cut off your fingernail and it's too short, what happens? It hurts like anything. It's still attached, if you like. So we have to develop a healthy degree of detachment from the material energy through purification. It is one thing to understand the nature, theoretically understand the nature of the material energy. It is another thing to be practically detached from it. Because, you know, you could use this and say, okay, everybody should now become a sannyasi, give up family life, it's just maya, all it's going to do is cause you pain, suffering, just give it up. Right? We should all become sannyasis. But that will just, that obviously is not going to work. It doesn't work. We've tried, we've seen that, we've seen attempts at that, and we've seen spectacular failures also. Some have been successful. But generally speaking, you know, whilst we understand the nature of the material energy and its illusory features, we also have to understand and appreciate this, what does I say, the aesthetic advantage. It looks good. It still looks attractive for us. And even though it's not very user-friendly, still it looks good. So we think, woo! It looks good. That's the amazing thing about Maya. She looks good, despite the fact that if you get close, that's it. You're scrunched up like a piece of paper, just crumpled up and thrown away. So, the devotee is actually trained to see everything in relationship with Krishna, even the material energy. But everything has a connection with Krishna. Even the illusory nature of the material energy is ultimately governed by the Lord. And so therefore, the devotee is trained not to reject it, but to accept it. Inasmuch as the example is given like the, if you want to chop down the tree, the material energy is, or the material creation is likened to a tree. You know, there's the example in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, right? Where there's the upside down tree, the reflected tree. The real tree is standing on the bank. Right? And it's recommended that we cut down the tree of material entanglement, the tree of material illusion, if you like. And the means by, you need the axe, you need an axe to do it. The axe head is likened to knowledge, transcendental or spiritual knowledge. But you also need a handle by which you can, you know. So that's the material body. The material body that we're given, especially in a human form of life, a very special opportunity, is likened to the axe handle. But you have to get the axe handle from where? From the tree itself. So you actually have to use the tree to cut down the tree. Huh? So in the human form of life, we're given an opportunity to cut down the tree of material existence, to break our attachments. But we still have to use the facility that we've got. That facility, you know, the facility of the material body, in and of itself, you can't use material things to free yourself from the material energy. You can't actually do it. But if we take the spiritual knowledge which is given to us by Krishna, which is taught us by the spiritual master, and learn that in the human form, which is still a material form, if you like, but we're given the spiritual or transcendental knowledge, and we're given the opportunity, we're given the facility to cut down the tree of material existence. Or, shall we say, to detach ourselves from matter and from the illusory effect of the material energy. Then this is what Mucchakunda is recommending for us. In the human form of life, we're given an opportunity not to chase after the things of the material realm. which is exemplified in the relationship between a man and a woman in householder affairs, basically. Although the dilemma for us is because we're not so advanced, still we have to sublimate or purify those attachments by going through the same activities as apparently the materialistic persons. When you think about it, it's an art. But the science of Krishna consciousness gives us the vision by which we can see the spiritual purpose in our activities. You know, we still have to get a job, we still have to be educated, we still got to look after our kids. Right? Even though we know, oh, they're all illusion. Right? They're all illusion. And they're all causing me a lot of pain. Huh? Some pleasure. But as we identified before, if we calculate the amount of minutes pleasure we get out of the hours of struggle, it's not a good deal. But still we're attached. Amazing, this is the amazing thing of the material energy. It still keeps us entangled. Yet, for a devotee, if we're able to cultivate transcendental or spiritual knowledge, then we can see the purpose behind these activities is to actually detach us from the material energy. So we're given an opportunity. Yes, you can utilize your propensity or your attraction for material enjoyment in a spiritual way so that gradually you become detached. And so therefore we have, you know, the Varnashram system, basically. Working according to a particular occupation, working according to a particular ashram, gradually go through life with a focus on the artha, that which is actually valuable, as opposed to the anartha. We still work with the anartha, that which is not completely desirable or not fully desirable, especially if we're a transcendentalist, these things we're detached or aloof from. But because, generally speaking, everybody has some degree of attachment to the material world, that needs to be purified. And so therefore, we have the Varnashram system whereby we perform our material duties, but the purpose of the Varnashram system ultimately is not just to perform material duties for their pleasure, but ultimately to please Krishna. This is called sacrifice. We were discussing the other day in a program that we, Ram Kumar's place, this point of sacrifice. We give up our material propensity to enjoy the material world. We give that up and perform those activities with the eye for pleasing Krishna. That's called sacrifice. Sacrifice means acknowledging the supremacy of the Lord, then performing all of our activities for His pleasure. Right? That's called sacrifice. And as we were discussing, the word sacrifice means to make sacred, basically in Latin. Sacra is sacred, basically. And fischiae, I think, is to make, to create. So sacrifice means to make sacred. So it's interesting, the devotees basically perform the same. We're still working in family affairs and still have our jobs and still doing all of these activities. But we understand, or we should understand, the nature of those things as being temporary and not really the be-all and end-all of existence. The focus of a devotee's activities is on his or her sadhana, actually. That's the most important focus. Although at different stages of our careers, we'll find that that may change also, because, you know, with family life then comes children, and then you get a big, you know, then big responsibilities come. Surrender, the painter, was telling the boys, he said, you know, it's a real trick. The first thing that happens is you get married. He said, then the next thing that happens is you have kids. And he said, watch out. that's when life gets really tough. And then he says, you know, he's a house husband, right? His wife has a better paying job than, not that he does work also, but his wife has a better paying job. So he looks after his son. And he said, you know, the other day, I just couldn't get him settled down. He just wanted to be with me all the time. I couldn't even cook. I had to cook lunch. Couldn't cook lunch because he wanted to be with me. 3 hours. He said, 3 hours. I couldn't get. And then I finally got him to sleep. And then his mum comes home. He says, not easy. You know, and you know, the children are designed in such a way so that whenever they make a noise, then you're supposed to snap to attention. Right? Mothers know this. You know, you become a servant of the devotee. The devotees, you become a servant. And it's interesting because our parents jump, especially when we're young, you know, just one little whimper. Oh, what's wrong? Is he okay? Then the child becomes conditioned to that. And they, you know, they do all sorts of things to get attention. And as this is what happens. I know, you know, I was pretty disappointed when my younger brother came along because then the attention was on him and not on me. So, you know, you see the oldest child, you know, whacking the younger one. Mommy, he hit me. No, I didn't. So, you know, this is, it's throughout the different stages of our spiritual life, we'll be challenged, you know, due to the attachments, basically. But if we stick to the spiritual principles, then, you know, despite the fact we might get, you know, distracted from time to time, if we stay in the association of devotees, regularly hearing the Bhagavatam, chanting Hare Krishna and so forth, we'll gradually learn to develop an appreciation and understanding of what's actually taking place. And be able to keep the focus on, this is one of the biggest challenges for the devotee, especially in the household of Asha, is keep the focus on our sadhana and our devotional cultivation and development of Krishna consciousness. Because ultimately that's what really satisfies us. That's what really makes us happy. You know, when we're chanting Hare Krishna, in a kirtan with the devotees, or if we're chanting our japa very attentively with focus, then we feel complete relief. And you know, the material creation just disappears, practically speaking. Huh? It's described, you know, the ocean of material suffering, which appears so vast and uncrossable, shrinks to the man of water that exists in the footprint of a calf, right? It's described in the Bhagavatam. And in fact, the Bhagavatam recommends, this is what we should be looking for. We need even just a moment of spiritual ecstasy, of spiritual realization. We'll counteract, remove all of the anxiety and suffering that we've experienced in our existence. Of course, without that, then, you know, life is considered to be valueless, actually, for the devotees. So, this is why it's recommended that we keep in the association of the devotees, because the devotees have, their focus is on something beyond material existence. They're not looking for material benefits as the ultimate. Yeah, we're all concerned about, you know, getting a job and making money and getting ahead. We're concerned about those things. We want to see our children protected. We want to see them educated properly. It's not that we don't want those things. We do want those things. But we understand that the temporality of those things and the necessity to focus on that permanent achievement. Permanent achievements are those which are accrued through the practice of devotional service. That's real permanent achievement. And that which gives us real and lasting satisfaction. So Mucchakunda is saying we shouldn't ruin our spiritual lives by becoming too entangled in these things. There's always that danger, that risk for the devotees. Become too entangled in material activities and then lose the opportunity to make progress in spiritual life. And so therefore, we have to be wary. Watch out for the, as it says here, all that glitters is not gold. Right? All that glitters is not gold. The aesthetic advantage. You know, it looks really good, looks great, but actually, it's not. You know, and advertising is based on this principle, right? Buy now, pay in 2 years' time. Wow, what a deal. This is how they do it, right? You can have the latest, you know, whatever it is, whatever Harvey Norman happened to be selling, the latest DVD, CD, TV, HD TV. Right? Buy now, pay in 2 years' time. That's what material life is all about. Buy now, pay later. When you pay, then it really hurts. Right? It really hurts. You look at the value of the thing, you know, you promised to pay $2,000 for it, now it's worth $50, right? And in 2 years' time it's only got a tenth of the features that the new one's got. And now you're stuck with it for another 2 years because you've got to pay for it. So, we have to dispassionately look at our material existence and realise what it is and try to detach ourselves from it. Armed with the sword of knowledge, basically, we have to cultivate that knowledge, and we also need to cultivate that higher taste in Krishna consciousness. And generally that comes through chanting Hare Krishna nicely. Chanting with the focus, chanting with attention, putting ourselves in an environment where we're peaceful enough. My experience is that, if I go to bed early and get up early and chant a couple of rounds before Mangal Aarti and then sit down after Mangal Aarti and just chant my rounds all the way through, then I reckon by around about the last half of the 16th round, I've got a little bit of peace. Right? But you know, I can go to bed early, have a good night's sleep, get up early, and then just chanting Hare Krishna. You know, it's like the mind is just going, just around, 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 all over the place. But if we concentrate on that, how are we going to get anywhere if we're, you know, trying to chant our japa on the train or in the tram or, you know, driving to work or whatever. How much? You don't get a taste, practically speaking. And then you see something, boo, what was that? And we get, you know, the mind and the senses just, and of course the advertisers know this, they know that. So they'll be, the material energy is working on us all the time. So as sadhakas, we actually have to put the effort into creating an environment, at least some part of the day, especially best if it can be in the morning. It's recommended. You know, Brahma Muhurta is recommended. That's the time for spiritual pursuits. And especially for those of us who are young, because many of us are young, well, younger than me anyway, and not married, right? Married but not burdened with heavy responsibilities. So now my advice is take advantage of the peaceful situation while you can. Right? Take advantage. It's such a, you know, we have such a wonderful opportunity. In the human form of life, we are given such a wonderful opportunity. If we've got the association of the devotees, if we have the temple nearby, and we can, you know, put aside the time, get up in the morning and go early and sit down and just chant Hare Krishna, then we'll get the taste. Then we'll get a taste. That's our jagya. That's actually the in this day and age, that's the process. What is it? Nascheva, 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 katir anyata. You can't get the ultimate goal of existence any other way in Kali Yuga other than chanting Hare Krishna with focus and attention. Then if you're focused and attentive to chanting Hare Krishna, then, and only then, practically speaking, will you get the, you know, the param drishtva, the higher taste, which enables us to then, you know, withstand or tolerate the distractions of material life, practically speaking. So while we're young, or those who are older and don't have to worry about these things anymore, of which we have a few in our fold, we should take advantage, really take advantage and create that environment where we really can take shelter of Krishna. And of course, if we can take shelter of Krishna, then Krishna protects us. Krishna, when you're chanting, especially chanting 16 rounds, then Krishna gives you a special envelope of protection. You know, you get a force shield of spiritual protection. So this is the advantage of the human form of life, and the advantage of spiritual practice. It gives us the opportunity to actually make our lives sacred, if you like, make them purified, make them spiritually focused, so that even if we are engaged in what ordinarily other people are engaged in and it's just entangling them like anything, when a devotee performs the same activities, if it has that foundation of spiritual practice, then actually they get purified by those activities. This is the amazing thing. He's doing exactly the same thing as a materialist, but the different thing is he got up at 3:30 in the morning, took a bath, did his puja, then chanted Hare Krishna and studied the Bhagavatam. And the interesting thing, studying the Bhagavatam gives us that completely spiritual focus. We see things completely different to the materialistic people. And that's a really simple thing. It's not very difficult. All of us know that. And of course, all of us can do it. Okay. So does anybody have any comments or questions on any of these points? Good Friday. Hot cross buns. Yeah, there you go. We do the same things, but we offer it to Krishna.